And we're live.
Hey, everybody. It's Ryan Ozone, and you're in for another episode of the Masters of the Galaxy podcast. And today we got two great guys with me. I got the two guys from the Power and Honor Foundation. We got Josh Van Pelt and Emiliano Santa Lucia. Did I say that right?
Almost.
Ah, man, I was practicing. I'm trying. So, yeah, it's great to finally have you guys here. I've been trying to get you guys on together, and we finally did it. And now, if you guys wouldn't mind, let's give everybody listening just a little background on what the Power and Honor Foundation is. I know a lot of people may know that you guys came out with a book, but maybe they don't understand exactly what you guys stand and represent and actually do. So if you don't mind, you know.
Sure. Originally, I had purchased some artwork and we weren't quite sure what to do with it. I had purchased the collection from Roger Sweet back in 2006, I believe. And we realized that we had a treasure trove of He-Man history. So we had decided how we were going to showcase the art. Best way to preserve it, best way to share it. Threw around some ideas, and we came up with the idea of the Power and the Honor Foundation as a public charity that would preserve the history and artwork of He-Man. Originally, there were four members. Emiliano and I are the two of the original members, and now we have a third member, Luis Villet Gomez, who also helps out a lot.
Very good. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a lot of people don't understand that, you know, you guys are here to preserve and restore, I guess, and keep artwork from the past and keep it up, you know.
Right. The original idea was we didn't realize how large and how much stuff we'd come across in the history and the stories that we would tell from the artist's perspective, not just pieces of art or prototypes or toys that we would find. It was also the stories behind those pieces of artwork or those toys or
those designers. Sometimes those are even more exciting than the actual piece of artwork as well, I'm sure.
Because absolutely.
The stories can be like, you know, like ridiculously great, you know, just the names involved or the people who, you know, were involved in whatever the painting picture or prototype, you know,
right. And a lot of these artists and designers were never given credit originally by Mattel when they were working on the line. So it was nice to give them a voice,
right.
You know, to let fans know, you know, who is behind the line that they loved so much as a kid. Now they could actually see that, you know, Mark Taylor was so influential or Errol McCarthy did all the card backs we remember,
correct.
Which we actually found out pretty late in the line.
Yeah.
Like we didn't realize who the artist was till Emiliano has a story about that. But
now, were you guys influential on the figures that Super 7 made of Errol McCarthy's cardback figures that came out last year?
Well, no, we didn't do anything for those, but I think we can say that they happened in a way because of us, because
yeah.
We covered that art. We were definitely the first guys that sold those pieces, and we bought the pieces from Errol. We showcased them at a Power and Honor reception in 2012 for the first time. So we revealed them for the first time. Nobody knew about those originally. Then, of course, somebody has got the art and got the figure created and released. But yeah, we can say it's our fault.
Yeah, no, and that's a great, you know, misstep by, you know, because you guys really came out of left field with that when you finally showed the world and gave Errol the credit that he's due, because he came out with a lot of cool stuff, and you know, he was kind of like nobody really knew, you know, or credited. You know, he wasn't really credited with anything with the card.
Yeah, because he was never signing his pieces. I think like only
right.
A couple of cardbacks have his signatures. And maybe a couple of the New Adventures mini comics have the signature and the credits. But other than that, no, it just say never sign and stuff. It was weird, but it was really responsible for a lot of art, not just for Masters of the Universe.
He worked on dozens and dozens of toy lines, from Mattel to Playmates to LJN to Hasbro, Galoob.
Right, right. Yeah.
That he still doesn't get credit for on those, but slowly that artwork's getting out.
Yeah, it like I said, it was a great misstep by, you know, by accident or whatever, but you guys really brought him to the forefront. I mean, even though you guys weren't the driving force behind the figures, I guess you can say, but you actually were, because without your help bringing him to light, maybe those figures would never have been, and the card back art may never have come to, you know, to people the way that it has. And it's a great thing, because that's some really good work, and it showed you know, people into the future of what maybe the next line of figures were going to be.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. And unfortunately, there's no real history or names to those characters. So there were some artistic liberties taken on the part of, you know, naming the figures, but it was pretty cool to see them actually made.
I'm sorry, Brian.
No. I was just going to say that I messaged Errol, and we're in talks, hopefully get him on the show as well. And, you know, I'm going to bring up a lot of stuff about the, you know, the figures that came out, and how he, you know, what his response would be to it. I'm sure he's ecstatic that finally his figures were brought to life in plastic. So,
you find out about a lot of these artists is that these were just jobs back in the 80s. So just because it's really significant to us, because we remember those figures,
yeah,
they may have pumped out that drawing. He sent the, you know, got approval on the line art that we have, and then he would color it and send that color off to Mattel, but he would never think about it again. Like sometimes
right.
they didn't even realize things. He never even knew that some of the figures were or were not made to him. So there isn't like this definitive line of like, oh, that figure finally got made. For all he knew, the last 40 figures never got made.
Right, yeah.
And also, I wanted to be more specific about those and where the credit goes. These are not Errol McCarthy creations. The art that we saw, that it was posted, etc., is box art, is the art for the back, is not concept art. I don't think Errol has anything to do with the creation of these characters. Most likely, these characters have been created by marketing and visual design department at Mattel, not even the original department that was responsible for creating the products. That was preliminary ideas department. Because they were just reusing parts. So probably marketing requested a cheap wave, a filler wave, as it was used to call, and the visual department just put together some pieces and sent the photos to Errol to create the box art for the cards. But we probably will never know who was responsible for those. And that's also why we haven't came across any other information. Because most of
there was no reference material or anything along with it.
Yeah, most of the art survived because of Roger or other artists in the preliminary department. Some of the art from visual design was saved by guys like Dave Wolfram or Martin Arriola. But who knows about those? Maybe there weren't even drawings. Maybe just shop just put them together. It's most likely what happened, because they were just existing parts.
So then how did you figure out that was Errol McCarthy's work? If his name wasn't on it, did you guys have to do like detective work to figure it out? Or Mark, did Mark told you? Or
It's a bit of everything. Well, I think James once brought this up. I want to credit this to him too, because he reminded me. But even before James reminded about it, my friend Alessio Di Marco from Italy, the guy I did the first website with, Masters Unbound, is a big gym collector, and Errol had done some artwork for Big Gym. And Big Gym was still selling in Europe in 81 and 82. And there was some art on the back of the boxes, and my friend recognized it was the same artist.
Really?
And yeah, and there was a little booklet, the Big Gym Passport, where you collected stickers from the figure.
Right, I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, and that was signed. It was Errol McCarthy, so we knew the name. And I remember doing some research years ago, but I couldn't find anything about him, and then I just forgot about it. And after we started working with Mark Taylor, I asked him, do you by chance know a guy named Errol McCarthy? And he replied to me. I said, oh, yeah, of course, it's my buddy. And he was, Errol
really?
Was copied in the email.
Wow.
Oh,
that's a great story, man.
Yeah, and we got in touch right away.
That's great. This is detective work. That's crazy.
Yeah,
and then it all down. I mean, it's a great downfall from there for him. I mean, because finally he's getting credited for all this stuff that he did, and he did some really good art. I mean, and again, that's what you guys represent. You know, to bring this to life, and preserve it, and show everybody, and keep it, and you know, mm-hmm. let everybody know that hey, you know, this is Masters. You know, this is the guy behind this piece of work,
and that was the idea behind our portfolios we're doing, so that. We can highlight some of the key pieces from,
yeah.
you know, Mark yeah. Taylor, from Errol, from Rudy, and they've gone over really well.
We're
pretty proud of them.
No, and it's something I would definitely, if I was behind it, it's great. It's great. Those are awesome, awesome things to have. I mean, you guys have done such great work with this stuff. It's ridiculous how. Now, are you guys in contact, in touch with these, with all the artists from? You know, I mean, I'm sure you definitely have to be.
Well, we are in regular touch with Mark and Errol, mostly. Sometimes we hear from Ted Mayer. I don't think we have, like, an ongoing relationship with the others.
Right.
But, you know, just because you get in touch, I mean, those were the important people.
Right. Now, with Mark Taylor, I'm sure, you know, you guys are buddies. You guys have anything that you are in the that you're working with again? I mean, because maybe people don't know, but he designed the moat, I guess you want to call it, that you guys came out with. Is it the moat for the original Castle Grayskull? Came with another piece that actually Castle Grayskull sat on. You guys, you know, came out with it and you know brought it to the forefront for everybody, and had it. You had it so it was, you could buy it in fabric or paper, I believe, right?
Yep.
That is just so cool.
and you could get it scaled for the vintage castle or the classics castle.
Correct, right. Is that still available?
The prints on our website, yes. Yeah, okay. Those are on-demand prints. This is actually vinyl.
Okay.
In tests that we did a cutout, the prints you purchase from our website are just sheets of paper, big sheets of paper, uncut.
Right.
So I have to cut themselves. But we wanted to do like a test to see what it would have liked it on vinyl and try with the actual toys. Now it's pretty badly bent, but you got it.
That's great. Now, was Mark a part of that? Was that his concept?
He drew it, yeah.
He did draw it, right? Yeah. Yeah, that something like that. Are you guys going to be doing anything else like that? Like bring anything from back from concept era, you know, to maybe hopefully bring it to light now?
Well, it's how can I say that? It depends on the kind of product we're talking about. We, as the foundation, we are more in the publishing side of things. So, you know, books, portfolios, this kind of stuff. Other kind of products, we would like to do them, but it's not really, we don't have that power or the license, by the way.
Right. So we would have to work along with someone else either has the license or who is currently making toys, and they say, do you have any reference material or do you have the original scans? And then we could partner with them that way. But the foundation itself is not into, making new products.
Right. No, because that was a great idea that you guys came out with the moat. Again, that's something else that, that is vintage art that was forgotten. And then, I've heard stories, but never a picture or anything until you guys actually, brought it to light to everybody. And then actually made the thing itself, which is amazing.
That's pretty cool.
No, I think it's really cool. And it's even cooler that, you made it for the new Classics line too. So it's this gigantic, it's almost what, 4 feet, man. It's huge.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It's remarkable. And I'm sorry, now getting back to Mark. So I know that you from social media or whatnot, you guys are buddy. Are you guys still close in contact with each other?
Yeah.
So does he have any good stuff still hiding that everybody else don't know about, or secrets, so to speak, or,
Rebecca has been posting most of his stuff on Instagram.
Okay.
Art that has been revealed recently, like the black and white grayscale, or that green guy with the red and yellow armor. Those are B sheets that never came out. I think there are probably a couple more that she hasn't shown yet. I think, I'm not sure how many, but not that much. Like, there isn't a huge archive of secret things. There are scraps, doodles, just some black and white sketches. There is some stuff. But I think by now, public, in a way or another, has seen most of it.
Okay.
The goal now would be to put everything together and show it the right way.
So is there another volume 2 coming out? Because I know everybody always asks about, because the first book says volume 1. So is there a volume 2, hopefully?
You want to say something, Josh?
You can hit that one. obviously, our goal is to get as much of the artwork out there and share it. In a way that, that we can. We aided on some of the Dark Horse art books. So I'm not sure. There wouldn't actually probably be a volume 2 that just took over where volume 1 like sort of left off. Volume 1 was just, that's all the artwork we really had at the time.
Okay.
Everything, almost everything in volume 1 came from Roger Sweet.
Really?
When he was with Mattel, they were moving headquarters, and there was a place called the Morgue where all the old prototypes and artwork that weren't currently being used by the departments went into a big storage building. When they moved their facility, all of the departments were told, you have to take whatever is yours out of the Morgue or it gets trashed. So he went in and took all the master stuff that he could find and kept it personally.
Oh. So at least he was able to preserve some of it.
Oh yeah, if he didn't take it, it would have been destroyed along with probably hundreds and hundreds of other Masters Universe pieces that did get destroyed at the time.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
So for the first book, it's pretty much 100% pieces that came from Roger Sweet.
There were some
there's a couple pieces. Roger actually only was the artist on a few of the pieces in volume 1. But
he was able to, but the pieces now actually belong to him because he saved them.
Correct. They were in his possession. Yep.
Right. That's a great story right there too. And
So,
it's
the idea of a volume two, Emiliano could expand on that, but I don't think volume two would just be another jumble of, you know, artwork that varied all over
right.
the place. I think it would be a little more. Our idea of books would be a little more focused on telling specific parts of history.
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, just the first book or catalog was also very focused on toy design because it was part of Roger. I remember we considered including some movie artwork that we had at that time, but it just didn't make sense. At one point, we say, okay, but this, like, 95% of this catalog is about the toy design part, so does it make sense to have just 3-4 pieces from the movie?
Right.
Not really. So we discarded that idea and focused it on the toy design aspect. Eventually, what we'll like to do is to do other things about other parts of Masters of the Universe, including probably bringing back the toy design.
Right.
But, I mean, that was done in 2011. What we could do now, it will be very different. Also, we know a lot more about the art than
right,
with 2011. So we will be able to tell the story better. We'll be able to complete it. We have all of Mark artwork. I mean, it will be like a new version, much more expanded. Probably, as just was saying, there wouldn't be a volume two. Right now, I'm pretty sure there will never be a volume two or a volume three. That doesn't mean there won't be
another book, right?
Yeah, it will be just different, a different way to do things,
right?
Hopefully, much better.
Yeah. Now, I forget who came out with a book after you guys, but they did a book, and it was pretty much everything from your book. I forget who it was or whatever. But now, did they have your okay for that?
Are you talking about the Dark Horse book?
Was it the Dark Horse that did it?
We worked with Dark Horse on their first book.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we worked with them on that.
Okay. Because it was pretty much everything from your book, and I was like, wow. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? You know? I mean, all the content was yours, and it was pretty, you know, the book was pretty much all your stuff. So, you know, people who didn't...
There was a lot of overlap, but they had a few different sections. It was obviously laid out a little differently.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It covered a much larger time period. There were definitely differences. Definitely worth getting both of them, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. But I'm sorry, but so my question was: is there going to be a volume two? Now, there isn't going to be a volume two, so to speak. So, do you guys do you hope to come out with another book? Is that something
absolutely.
You guys? Absolutely, I love to hear that.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, it was never a secret that we've been working on other books. And, like, I literally have projects I'm working on, concepts. Some are just concepts and ideas. Some are I have the files where I'm putting together stuff.
Right.
Thing is, finding the publisher, putting together the materials, and
the time too, I'm sure.
time, yeah. Like, if you talk about toys, it seems like a small thing.
It's not.
But I mean, like, compare exactly. It's not, but like compared to Transformers, we have 90 pieces in total, or less than that in the line. And it's not that simple.
Yeah.
The hardcore fans know it's when you want to account for all the variants and whatever else came out around the world, we're talking about more than 1,000 pieces.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
and that's just toys, not even talking about all the merch that's out
right,
there.
Right, right.
It's just toys.
That brings me to another question, is that I remember seeing, maybe it was a year or maybe a couple of years ago, you guys were collecting like She-Ra's, you know, loose, things like that, figures, to do like variants, to find the little itty bitty differences. Now, did you guys, was that a project you were working on? Did you guys come to a consensus yet about that?
Well, you're referencing when Emiliano was here one year, we took out over 1,500 vintage loose figures and we had them spread out.
I remember the pictures of it and all the plastic bins and
right. So that was the start of what Emiliano has done for the last 7 years.
Go ahead. Don't worry.
No, I was just going to say that as many as you find, there's always more.
Yeah.
Right, variants and differences and realizing that there obviously must be a piece that's out there that we still don't even know about because there's a companion piece that we found. Or you find a weapon that you don't know, with a certain country mark. And we're only talking loose.
Exactly.
So not even thinking which loose variations came on which cards, which would be impossible.
Or
near impossible to do at this point.
Yeah, because there's just so many countries involved and manufacturers and things like that.
And factories and paint masks and paint colors and different molds used. And it's mind-blowing to when you think about the number of unique variants, even just for He-Man or just for Merman or just for Skeletor. You could spend your whole life trying to track down every variant just for one particular character.
I'll give you just one number. My last count for He-Man variants that we know of, that we're kind of certain of, and that we, in a way or another, have proof, even if we don't have photos, is now 70.
Wow. Wow.
70 different He-Man around the world.
Wow.
And that's original He-Man. You're not talking like Thunder
not
Punch.
Just the original.
Just for He-Man. Yep.
That's crazy. That's insane. Now, how did you acquire all this stuff? Did you have to go, searching or? Because 70, just figure that's got to be at least 70 different places that it came from. So, I mean, you're traveling the world.
That's another, it makes up for another good story. Me and Josh started with whatever was at his place. He had these boxes of figures. So we started to lay them down on the floor. I remember we had this carpet of leeches for him. And we just started looking at them and asking friends if they knew information, etc. And we started photographing them. And we believe we were, we already had something there, like a good portion of it. And we were not even close, like to even understanding what.
Just when you thought you were, you weren't. Because at the end, you're 70, that's insane.
Yeah, and that was like the first couple of years. Then I started, I went to my friend's place here, always Alessio, that he had a good variant collections. And I photographed what he had, and he also had good information. Like, he could tell me what to look for and what we had.
Right.
I photographed everything he had. And then I started to understand what else was out there that I didn't know. Like, when I started, I didn't know anything about Rotoplas from Venezuela.
Right, right.
I didn't even know they existed. And probably we only knew, about one Leo toys. Eventually, I got in touch with a bunch of collectors in Italy. For some reason, there are a lot of variants in Italy. I got in touch with them, and one year I just drove around Italy with my car and did a photographic equipment, and I started photographing everything.
Really?
Turned out that one of the biggest guy here lives in Sicily, like a couple of hundreds kilometers from me.
Really?
Yeah, and so and it was perfect because he is great.
Like a road trip, you know?
Very committed to this, to helping us, and is a great collector. So, like, every 6 months, I go to his place. I've been doing this for 3 years now. I go to his place, and he always, like, he has, like, 100 new pieces.
Wow.
And that's how we got to 70 emails.
Wow, that's a crazy number.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, it's a good crazy, though. I mean, but that must have taken so much time to figure out and decide and lay out and things like that. I mean, 70, yeah. Man, that's crazy.
Well, another cool thing is that we were able also to start to understand what is not a variant.
Okay, so you, I mean, you really must be like a professional at this stage of the game, then. You know, with that many out and being able to say what is and what isn't, I mean, you know, you must be like a toy detective when it comes to that.
Well, it's, I mean, we I guess we are about Masters of the Universe because each toy line has this different way of producing the products. Different kind of differences.
Right.
So I guess we know about Masters of the Universe, but like if you ask me about Star Wars or Transformers, I don't know pretty much.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, like I love Masters. That's my thing. You know, Masters of the Universe is that's where all my energy is. But I mean, you guys are definitely at a different level than I am with all the experience and everything that you guys have. And it's you know, that's what you guys are doing to get all this information to bring it to us and make sure it's the real deal. And that's why I want people to understand what the Power and Honor Foundation is. This is like, you know, the unfortunately it's a great job you guys must have to do it because it's so exciting and fun that you get to go to places and visit and get to play with toys, and
we wouldn't do it if we didn't love it. So
yeah, and you know, and then you know, you're documenting it and photographing it, and then you know, you can bring it to life again. It's an amazing thing that you're doing, and people need to understand how cool of a job it is.
Yeah,
if you're hiring, I'm available. I'm just across the river.
Well, unfortunately, the foundation is 100% volunteer. And right, so we, you know, spend our own money.
Yeah.
You know, Emiliano spends his own gas money to go, and
it's,
you know, so
I mean, like, I'm a follower. I mean, I get it. I understand. You know, it's like a nonprofit organization.
It is actually a 501c3 tax deductible charity. So any donations made to the foundation are tax deductible.
Of course, yeah. It really is, you know, it's a real thing. It's a real foundation.
Yeah. And that also means like none of the money goes to us basically.
Yeah. I mean, it on your part, you know, you're doing a good deed for the community. Really are. But you get to have a ton of fun doing it, which is great. I mean, I would love to be in your shoes when you get that phone call. Hey, man, I got this variant nobody else seen in the world. You want to come check it out? Damn right, I'm a copy right there. You know, so I mean, it's with the 70 variants. Is the Wonder Bread He-Man one of them, or is he?
No,
you consider him a separate figure?
So far, I consider it a separate figure.
Okay.
See, that's also the kind of challenge you run into when working on this kind of projects. It's not just the physical work, the practical work of going to visit collectors, taking photographs, recognizing the variations. But once you decide to try to educate public about them,
mm-hmm.
you also have to decide how to do it, which is has been one of the issues for me for quite some time. Like, okay, how do we explain all this?
Right.
And so stuff like what you were wondering rightfully is, should we consider that a human variant or another character? That's something I actually haven't thought yet. Like, I had thought about Cobra Khan Camuflado.
Right. See, like, to me, I consider that a completely separate figure than...
It is, because it's a different release with
a different name.
With a different name on the package. So right. that separates him from the regular Cobra Khan.
Yeah.
On that He-Man, we don't know.
That's the thing. You know, nobody knows, man. It's so crazy how that figure has put amnesia on everybody. And yeah. Nobody knows. It's insane. I remember watching that show, and the toy collector guy, whatever his name is, and
the toy hunter.
Yeah, uh-huh. And Scott, remember Scott was on it, and
and
you know, he was looking for the Wonder Bread He-Man. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, walk downstairs into the vault. So I'm sure you know. I mean,
Mattel has zero record of it. We'll never get the answer.
Is that
from
really
them.
True? Is that the truth, yeah. though? Do you believe
in
that?
Before they put out the commemoratives in 1999, 2000, Mattel contacted me, and I actually had to send them samples of the brown-haired He-Man.
So pretty much the truth is that what was on the show then, that Scott wasn't lying, that they really have anything.
Right. So I sent them three of them. They used them for their research. They returned them to me and said that there wasn't enough evidence that it was their figure for them to include it in the commemoratives. Yep.
Oh, so there was actually a plan to use him as a commemorative.
At the time, it was an option. I don't know how far it got,
really?
But I sent them three copies.
Wow. So I mean, that's the funny thing. It's like, because they acknowledge it, and then they pull, like, they go forward one step, and go back two steps with that figure or character or whatever you want to call it. It's just odd. It's just so crazy. Everything that surrounds that figure.
It's amazing after all this time. And
nothing's come out.
Right. And it isn't a super rare figure. It's not like there's only 100 copies out there.
No. There's plenty of them still out there.
And you can still find them in the wild. We do know that,
yeah.
You know, these aren't customs. These are not fakes. They were vintage.
Yeah.
You know, in the wild collections, you can still find them. So where they came from, no.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
It's insane, man. It's crazy.
Nope.
That should be a job you guys could go on, man. That should be a hunt for you.
Yeah, we should track all.
You can figure that out.
Yeah, all the sellers, see if they were all from the same area at least, and try to narrow that down. But I can't do that from Italy.
yeah, it's crazy. That would be like a full-time job just to figure that figure out, I think.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you one thing, though. If you did figure it out, you definitely get a huge praise and recognition for it, because Jesus.
I'm afraid that the answer isn't as fancy or as exciting as we would hope. Guess is it was either made an error or whatever, and it was just released as a giveaway, as a regional promotion.
That's what I think too, correct.
That would be my guess, but I mean, I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I'm stupefied. I remember having them as a kid, and then my mom threw them away with all my other stuff, and then I found one in a flea market in Connecticut in great shape. So yeah, you do find them in the wild, you know, and I got them for like 50 cents, you know? So, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, collection wise, of your own stuff, guys, I buy stuff from you still. I mean, you know, How is it for you to actually find something new and be like, this is great? I mean, you guys have both huge collections. I mean, I praise to myself that I have a big one, but not compared to you. I mean,
there's so much, like we were talking about variants, or so much merchandise out there that you could find something every day. I was just showing Emiliano before we came on the Italian fan club I finally got. So I was showing him pieces of that he remembered from his childhood, but I had never had one before.
Oh, that's cool. What about you, Emil? I mean, like, do you still, you know, find anything that's...
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I don't ant a lot for stuff, like, especially for variants, I give up. Like, after realizing there, I say, oh, we're... If, like, if there is a good deal for a bunch of Rotoplast or a bunch of Leo figures, I'll get them, but I'm not hunting. Because once you know there are 1,300 figures out there, no, it's not.
Now, so is the Leo figures really still that hard to find? I mean, from you're from... If anybody out there don't know, I mean, Emiliano lives in Italy, so you're closer to India. Mm-hmm. For us, you know, Josh and I and everybody else on this side of the world, I mean, I've came across maybe a few in my lifetime. Are they really that rare?
No, I don't think they are actually the rarest at all. They're less rare than
really.
Yeah, I mean. There are probably certain Top Toy stuff or certain Rotoplast stuff that is definitely harder to get than Leo figures. Problem with Leo is that there isn't a lot of sellers. And those are usually are in very bad shapes, and some of the sellers in India have been scooping them out and slowly releasing them, inflating the prices for a long time. But they're not that hard. I guess they become like legendary rare because they were discovered early on through my Leo figure
that I posted that figure
in 1998 and everybody went crazy about Leo Faker, believing him it was super rare. And for some time it was, but right now I don't think it's that rare at all. I think there are some Leo that are definitely rarest. For example, there are rumors about a Leo Hordak.
Really? That'd be pretty cool.
But looks like only one guy has seen it and sold it.
It's too good to be true then.
Yeah, but for example, there are Leo New Adventure figures.
Well, yeah. The He-Man was released, just a plain He-Man. He was released on a New Adventures card.
Yep.
Not just him, but there were also other actual New Adventure figures. There were Spinwave, Karate, Hoof, Bathead.
But were they vintage style or were they the regular New Adventure figures?
Regular.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, they were sold in the same way with that E-Man in the New Adventure style card. I'm pretty much sure that those New Adventure style cards weren't from India. Leo toys were sold in India and in Serbia. In the early 90s,
really?
Yes. So I might be wrong on that, but those New Adventure cards might be from Serbia.
Oh, that's kind of new. I did not know that. I thought they were exclusively from India because everybody down. Wow.
Yeah, I discovered it 3 years ago through this friend.
That's interesting in itself. So then, speaking about the Faker, do you come across him a lot? Because that's one of my all-time want list.
Because I said I don't hunt for them, so I don't have the kind of contacts these hardcore collectors have that they have.
Yeah.
People in every country and just deal in private with them. I don't have this.
Yeah. Josh, do you remember a store in the village, Love Saves the Day?
Yes.
Yeah, that was my go-to place. Unfortunately, they're not there no more, though, but...
Yeah, there used to be in Red Bank, New Jersey, the Groove spot, Rob Bruce.
Right.
He used to have some vintage stuff in like the 90s. But No, there's no good places
Yeah,
around
yeah.
anymore for vintage stuff.
The internet killed it. They put all the good places out of business, unfortunately.
Yeah. Although I mean, without eBay, I wouldn't have half the collection I have, so I can't
Yeah.
really complain.
Yeah, no, I well, you know, that well, that's one good thing. Like eBay brought the store to you. You know, you really don't have to
Yep.
go anywhere. So it is a good thing.
No. By the way, was something that was it was bugging me for some time, and you can tell me if it's just me or not. I like to observe people's habits, even especially about toys and collecting. And I see on especially on Facebook these trends of people just asking to sell them stuff,
Oh, I
like
can't stand
not even looking anymore. Just, oh, somebody
that.
has this to sell me. It's just me, or it's really a trend now?
No, it really is, and to be honest with you, that's why I never put my collection on Facebook or take pictures of them because of that. I did take pictures of my room a couple of months ago, and because it was completely destroyed, like I said, there's just so much stuff. And I got so many messages selling this, selling that. Like they must have like zoomed in on the pictures and pulled pe like I didn't even know the stuff was there until I zoomed in on the picture.
Yep.
But yeah, no, a lot of people they do that. I mean, Josh, you must get it a lot. I mean, I'm sure I've done it to you. You know,
And I'm happy that, to help fellow collectors. That's what this community is about. So,
right.
pieces move from collection to collection to collection, and help people fill in the holes is part of the fun.
Yeah, like I said, you know, we all had that go-to spot. You know, we had Love Saves the Day, and now it's you know, the Cafe Wa, so it's great.
Yeah, back in the day, that was a pretty cool site I ran.
Yeah. So with going forward, what do you guys have? What projects can you guys talk about to let people know what you guys got coming up, if there's anything that you can speak about? Because that people need to understand that, you know, when you're doing projects with certain companies and whatnot, you got to be hush hush. You can't really speak about it in
Right,
public
usually,
until you're at a certain level or point, you know.
right, they give you permission to talk about them.
Exactly, exactly.
So historically we've put out portfolios, so that's something we'd love to continue to do.
Hope you do, because they're great.
It's a neat little way to get artwork out there, to get the artist names out there, a very high quality frameable thing,
Yes.
plus you're getting multiple pieces. This past year, Comic Con, along with Super 7, we put out an Earl Norm
Yep.
single print, and that went over pretty well. So I think that's a format that we may continue
Yeah,
to try to do.
I got that with Brian. Me and
Yep.
Brian
Yeah.
were standing there. He's like, "Did you get your
I
print?" I said, "I sure did, buddy."
think that one came up pretty nice. Luis from the foundation actually has the original of that hanging up, but
Oh, really?
yes. So the best we the rest of us can do is
So
have
what'd
the
you do?
Super
You
Seven.
got to scan his, I guess?
Yes.
So he scanned it in for us.
Okay.
Yeah, so
Awesome.
that is tried from the original, which is something we like.
And we
Yeah.
left right the we left the full edges and borders and notes and arrows. And when Emiliano sent the file to the printer, he said, "I think you forgot to crop
No, but that's what you want to leave in, man. That's the cool
Right,
stuff,
that
you know?
usually you don't get to see that
Yeah,
sort of
that.
excess art and things. And if anybody doesn't like that, they could always crop it tighter if they want when they
Yeah, or
mount
you
it
can
and
get
frame it.
you the framer can cover it up
Exactly.
if
But
you
I
want
like that.
to.
I like seeing all that extra stuff.
I love the notes and stuff
Yeah.
like that. I mean, and Emiliano, I mean, you do artwork, so you know all about that stuff. I mean, you know, that's something that you probably do yourself. You know, so you guys, you know, the portfolios that you did were great. Is that something that you plan on doing going forward?
We'd love to. It's a bit challenging because a lack of original materials, like the stuff that people will really love to see, is not available. It's just not available, like box art by William George.
Right.
Just I mean, there is a tiny bit of hope to rescue some stuff now, but like people want a complete collection of box art. That's probably never going to happen.
That's hard.
Yeah, it got destroyed or lost, or it's the few remaining pieces are in the hands of collectors. We don't know.
Separate collectors too, not even just one individual.
The ideal way to do it will be finding an archive of slides with all the pieces, which is basically how we did the Obrero portfolio.
Because the original printing transparencies, right?
Yeah. Which are the original printing materials used back in the 80s.
So is that what you guys use for the portfolios?
Yeah. Original slides, original photograph done by Mattel to reproduce.
You're talking for Rudy's. We did that.
Yeah.
For Rudy's, you did it?
Yes.
Now, was that hard to find? Or, I mean, because stuff like that just don't show up. I mean, I'm sure that was, or was that something that he had that he was able to let you guys use? Or,
yes.
I mean,
everything was from Rudy except one piece that we had, and Rudy didn't. So we traded.
Nice. I would take that trade. Yeah, because he's good, though, man. He has a lot of his own stuff. Like, he kept a lot of his stuff, I heard.
Well, but yes, but there are still slides. It doesn't have any original.
Right. So the way Mattel worked, even with Rudy or Errol or William George, they kept all the preliminary, sketches, black and white line art, but the final colorized versions all went to Mattel, and Mattel just let everything go.
Right. Now, as an artist, Amo, like you don't stuff like that is like pretty much trash, right? Like, because that's like preliminary stuff, that's not the final piece, so usually stuff like that you don't usually keep around, right?
I guess it depends on from artist to artist, but no, we mostly keep stuff.
Yeah, Errol kept hundreds and hundreds of folders of preliminary art for other lines. We didn't find too much Masters preliminary art, but everything post Masters, there's preliminary art, then there's roughs and finished line art.
Yeah, but I guess that's because Errol really went into design after Masters or by the hand of Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Was he involved in Dungeons & Dragons? I get confused with my artists. Did he do that, or was that one of the other guys?
I don't believe he did.
No, it wasn't him, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, so the portfolios is probably a go if you get good material. And I'm sure you want material things that people haven't seen yet either. You want, original...
Well, that's tricky, too, because it looks like people want stuff that they have seen, actually.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's unseen stuff is probably better for books. For art prints, people prefer art that they know.
Yep. Things that they remember, bring back memories.
Right. Yeah. I guess I can understand that. But I would love, I'd rather things that I've never seen before. I mean, stuff like that would blow my mind. Along with things that I have seen. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the artwork is, great. And yeah, you do remember it as a kid or whatever from the past. But I mean, the things I love to enjoy to see are things that I've never seen. To me, there's just something about that really just,
Yeah, of course. I understand.
That's what I like. Yeah.
The format probably of the portfolio is more appealing to fans when it's about the nostalgic factor.
Right, yeah. Well, at this point in the game, that's exactly what it is. It's nostalgia because it's so old. But it's great that, I mean, you're able to do this. And again, with Errol, almost 30 years later, you guys were able to, bring him to the forefront for everybody. Because nobody really, he wasn't really Errol Norm or,
Right, but think of
like
the
that.
Millions and millions
or
of
Rudy.
Of pieces of, the action figures, but every single piece of merchandise you pick up that was produced is Errol. It's amazing. The percentage of
it's crazy.
Of pieces is Errol's art. He did everything and things were resized and flipped and cut, but it's still all based on Errol's art. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and then we still got the figures that came out last year, the year before, you know, his exclusives. I mean, it's great. And again, if I don't think we would have gotten those figures if it wasn't for you guys to actually say, hey, you know, this guy named Errol, you know,
yeah. And it's pretty cool for not just Errol, but all the artists, you know, yeah. to get their names out and for fans to, you know, just even reach out and say, you know, you made such an impact on me, you know, during my childhood, you know, you're so influential. And people like Emiliano who grew up to be artists, you know, their artwork actually influenced the next generation of artists,
exactly,
not just
yeah.
toys that I played with.
Right. Yeah. That's gotta be so cool. I mean, you know, when you were a kid, is this what you wanted to do, Emil? I mean, is this, you wanted to be where you are as an artist and whatnot?
I didn't know I wanted to do exactly this. This is kind of happening.
Really?
yeah, I mean, I wanted to be a comic book artist, but I didn't even realize that until I was in high school. Just said, so this is what I want to do. And then my career took this different turn to toy design. And I found out that's what I actually wanted to do. I wanted to do comics. I was happy I did comics because I did Masters of the Universe comics in the first place. That was my first job I enjoyed most. I enjoyed Transformers and G.I. Joe too, but of course, for obvious reasons, Masters was closer to my heart. And then I just discovered that designing toys, I'm definitely a better toy designer than I am a comic book artist, and it's funnier for me, a lot funnier.
Really?
Plus,
I'm sure it's got to be a lot more complicated, though, being a toy designer.
It has different challenges.
Yeah.
When you're, it's not that easy to do a comic book too. Like when you're doing a comic book, you are not just drawing. You need to be a director. You need to be an actor. You have to make your characters act. You need to be your director of photography. You need to be your costume designer.
Right.
Like all the jobs together in one. And you need to be able to tell a story in the picture. So there is a lot. Plus, it's very stressful because of the piece that you have to keep, especially when you do a monthly book. In toys, you just have a complete different set of problems to solve.
good way to say it.
Yeah, and it's it's more of a roller coaster. You go up and down. It's, for example, one thing that I enjoy is that I don't have to do a page every day. I don't have to draw a character, the same character every day. And the job itself is not the same every day. Like, I got to experiment different techniques. I got to do completely different products.
Right.
So it's always fun, always fresh in a way. Of course, there is a part of that that become routine in this job too, but it's still fun to do. At least it's funnier for me. I enjoy telling stories. At one point, I may like to go back and tell stories too, but I mean, it looks like people appreciate the toy, my work in toy design. I can't wait for some of the Masters of the Universe stuff that I did recently to be seen by fans so they can see that I'm able to do that too, other than Transformers.
So let's talk about that real quick. What are you guys getting into the Masters toys? If you can speak
I can say I work because it was said. I work it with Mondo.
Awesome.
And I design 4 figures for them.
So when the heck are they coming out?
I don't know. I'm not.
These damn things. I mean, they've been at like Comic Con now for like 4 years, man. And collecting dust. It's ridiculous.
I know.
So you were behind He-Man, Skeletor, Faker.
No, David Raposa was the designer for He-Man and Skeletor.
Okay.
I work on the next two for which the weapons have been revealed.
Right.
I can't even say the name of the characters. You've seen us.
No, I won't even ask you. I know you're not allowed to, but that's awesome that you're getting back into what you your heart is behind.
Yeah, I talked to Brock Otterbecker at Comic Con, and I said, "Look, this is what I do." I showed my portfolio. I said, "I'd love to work on Masters of the Universe," and he was so kind to say right away, "Oh yeah, you could do the other figures. We're not." But I'm with the same artist, you can keep doing the line for us. Sure.
Wow. Now there was no conflict with Hasbro with that? They were okay?
No. I'm a freelance. I don't.
Oh, okay. So
I'm not an employee for Hasbro. I'm free to work for anybody that gives me work. I must say, for the Hasbro guys are awesome with that. Like all of them are fans. In a way or another, of the toys they work on and the other toys too, and they they know how much I love Masters of the Universe.
Who will, the hell is to know that you love Masters?
They will love to have Masters of the Universe so they could put me to work on Masters of the Universe for them. But no, they are like never had a complaint about me working for other companies because. I built up good relationship with them where I just always come through and help them whenever they need me. So they know that they can trust me. And to be fair also to Hasbro is where I make a living. So they always come first. They have to. It's important to keep all clients happy, especially Hasbro. So... That doesn't mean I don't give the proper the right attention to the other clients. Of course, I do. It's just that when times come to pick what a job can do,
because Hasbro comes first.
Hasbro comes first. Fortunately, everybody I worked with for Masters of the Universe, so Mondo and Pop Culture Shock Collectibles and Super 7, they've been more than happy to let me work at my piece and finding the time to do the job.
Okay. All right, Josh, I just saw that. All right. Just real quick, I got one question to go back to your comic book days with MVC. You came out with a character you created, mm-hmm. Illumina. What's the story with this character? I know Mattel, that was pretty, I mean, that must have been heartbreaking for you because that was pretty much when they took control and said, you got to follow what the cartoon is doing then. And you guys couldn't do your own thing anymore at that point. And you guys, and then, you know, you showed her with her cat and then that was it. I don't know if you're allowed to speak about her.
Not
yet?
No, yes, we can.
Oh, you can. Oh, okay. Yeah. So what was her role supposed to be, and what was she supposed to, like? What, just real quick, a summary exactly of
In the story, man.
What?
In the actual story.
Yeah, like what was she a guard? Was she supposed to be?
She was supposed to be a guard. It's a character I kind of had in mind before the comic. Definitely. Like I had this lady dressed in white. Before that, I definitely had. I fleshed her out for the comic. The use we wanted to do for her was to tie some
loose ends. Some
story together. Yeah. Basically, it's I was going for something a bit more political, like, okay, there are kings on Eternia.
Right.
Why they aren't all after Grayskull?
So she was going to be evil.
No, she wasn't going to be evil. It was more like, absolutely not. She was an alright character. But the idea was Grayskull, the power of Grayskull was so big that it had to be kept away from kings and governors and political figures, if you want to say so. So there was a secret society.
Oh, cool.
There was a secret society, the Guardians of Grayskull. They were just a bunch of people keeping this everything that is known about Grayskull away from the public knowledge.
Okay.
It was just a conspiracy that had been going on for thousands of years of the secret society keeping the secrets away and hidden. Right. And Decker was one of them. Man at Arms was obviously one of them because, of course, Wu Hells could be part of that. Wu has close tie, sorcerer, etc. So Man at Arms was one of them. They were just in charge of keeping these secrets hidden until the time
was right.
Was right. So he met the prophecy of the twins.
Right.
So He-Man and She-Ra will show up. Now, Illumina was a member of the secret society. Now, in the context of 2002 series, the reason we never saw her was because she was stuck in the dark hemisphere behind the mystic walls.
Right, right.
She was there. She was keeping an eye on Skeletor, etc. On Keldor, actually, and she was stuck there. She was going to tie just part of this idea and to tie all these loose ends and explain this part. What else I remember? I mean, of course, it's all written somewhere on my old blog that I haven't updated in years, but it's all there. A cool thing that we wanted to do was that Triclops was one of them too, originally.
Really?
Yeah. And because all these guys had a wearer ring, which was the ring that came with Triclops and Traction.
Right. Oh, sweet.
So Triclops
had idea.
Yeah. And each of them had this wearer ring that opened and had like a magic projector inside that revealed some secrets, etc.
Right.
So, you know, we wanted to use pieces of the toys and give them some meaning.
Right. That's cool. No, that's great. That's an awesome thing, and then I guess that's when Mattel dropped the hammer, right? And they were said no.
Well, not specifically about this story, just about trademarks and creating new characters, etc.
Right. Oh man, that's so unfortunate because that sounds like such a great idea for that to go. And I thought the 2002 was a great canon. You guys, it was a great era, you know, bringing back He-Man, and then the story was great too, and that really got, I know, a lot of people upset when NBC it just sucked. But thanks for bringing that to light. That answers a lot of questions for people out there. Josh, by the way, what is your favorite thing to do? In the master's world, like what do you love to do? What do you love to like collect and go after?
Now I have three kids, three sons. So,
right.
You know, they have varying levels of interest in He-Man. They know their daddy's toys.
I saw your Battle Cat ride-ons for them.
Right. So all three of my kids have loved that Battle Cat.
Yeah. Yeah.
At one point, my oldest two were so close together, I had to have two of them out so they could ride side by side. So just sharing it with the kids. But I love just going through artwork and, you know, just talking with other fans in the community and seeing what other cool things people find. I've always been of the mindset it's not a race. You know, I'm not somebody that pesters.
There's
so much out there and there's no way that one person could have everything.
No, it's impossible.
A lot of enjoyment. Right. I get a lot of enjoyment out of just seeing new items pop up in somebody else's collection. It's not about me owning everything.
Yeah, because like you said, man, it's like to this day, like 30 years later, I mean, you still find new stuff. It's so crazy.
It's amazing. They slapped Masters of the Universe on everything.
Yeah, yeah. And then again, like you guys were saying with the variations yep. and stuff, when you start digging even deeper, it's just amazing how much stuff there really is more than...
Yeah, and he said there's 70 He-Man, there's probably 71 and 72
72. Right,
like it's,
right.
There is no end, and that's one of the problems with doing a book, is that what do you include, what don't you include? And at some point you have to call it and send something to the publisher, and you know the right. the day that you send it off,
it's when 73 comes in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's exciting. It's something that we're still, you know, getting enjoyment from, still learning new things, meeting new people.
Yeah.
Well,
that's the joy of the community. I mean, it really is a joy when you get down to it, and
yep.
you know, that you meet people with their collections and what they have. It's sometimes, you know, they're mind blowing what some people actually held on to.
Yeah, it is amazing the things that have survived in the hands of kids and collectors.
Right, right. And that was the time which toys were new. Nobody kept things in the box. Because
exactly. Even store displays. Like, who had the mindset to keep a store display in 1983?
Exactly. I mean, my store display, I had to buy pieces and stuff. But, I mean, you know, again, like, we, you know... stuff back then, you know, it was a little trash, you know, it was garbage. All right, bring out the next one, you know. It's crazy. That because that always amazes me how all some this stuff survived through the years, and you know, but people have, you know, graded mint on card, you know, A+ things. It's crazy.
And as a collector, I've gone through hundreds of vintage carded figures. And believe it or not, if they were kept in the original shipping case, they are not as nice as most of the, you know, really nice carded versions out there. If they were kept in the original shipping case, they are usually curled on one side. A lot of them have fallen off the bubble just because they're stored sideways and bouncing up and down. So the bubble's separated from the card. So just because you have a sealed case,
doesn't mean
don't open it and get them graded, because it's worth more as a sealed case than it is opening. You will not get, you know, AFA 90s out of a sealed case of vintage cards.
Right.
Of He-Man, just because of the size. If you're talking about smaller 3¾ figures like Star Wars or something, completely different. But of the He-Man figures and the size of the cards.
Yeah, it all comes into effect.
Yep.
So I guess we'll close this up, but before we go, is there anything that you guys want to... throw out there on the fish hook for people?
Keep collecting. Just keep the brand alive. That's you know, been something that's been exciting. We're, you know, being part of the foundation for, we incorporated the foundation in May of 2011, so we are coming up on the seventh
year. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So I mean,
look at that smile, Emiliano.
So it's something that, you know, for me, I was just a fan, you know, and a collector up until that point. And I still just consider myself a fan and collector, but it's been fun to help preserve and share a lot of the history that I wasn't even aware of 7 years ago.
Just quick. So, you know, you guys said that you, the book that you came out with was pretty much all the material that you had then. So from then to now, how much material do you guys think you have? All right, with that, I'm just going to have to say a lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
Basically, like, speaking of digital archive, because some of the art we collected, we don't actually have it, but we added to our digital archive.
Right.
Scans, et cetera, but they remain in the hands of the artists. The important thing for us was to have the scans. I would say, we have a lot. talking about toy design, we probably have twice around.
Wow.
Maybe not exactly twice, but let's say if we were doing a new version of that first book, it would be twice the size.
It would be a lot thicker, yeah. That's good.
But it hasn't necessarily all come as like large collections like from Roger. You know, some artists had a few pieces. We've gotten some just in the wild from other collectors or just happened to pop up. on eBay.
Plus,
so, you know, we've pieced it together a lot differently than that original.
Yeah.
And
physically, we have way more than what we scanned so far. but like for Filmation, we have close to 30,000 pieces.
Wow.
Like original art.
Wow. Now, and, James, I'm sure it might have helped out with that, right?
Well, he helped out a deal a couple of years ago for some very early concept art. Well, yeah, pre-production art for the Masters of the Universe cartoon.
Right.
So sketches for He-Man, Skeletor, early sketches.
Hila. And guys, we're talking about James Buster Toons E-Talk, in case anybody doesn't know. We really haven't mentioned that. We just keep referring to him as James. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's great news, guys. I really appreciate you being on the show, and
thank you for having
me. Yes, thank you.
And knowledge. No, it's listen. It's been great. You know, if you guys want to come back on one day, that'd be great. Maybe, you know, now we got everything situated with the technical difficulties. we should be able to fly better next time.
Yep.
I mean, it's been amazing. You guys, you know, the Power and Honor Foundation, I hope keeps going strong. It's a great thing. You know, you guys are doing a great thing for the community. If you know, people don't know, really look into it, go on the website.
We're on Facebook or powerandhonor.org.
Yeah. I mean, you guys, you know, social media, it's a great thing, really is. You know, and look into it, and you'll understand what you guys are really about, and you know, it's a great thing. So I really appreciate and I applaud what you guys do. I really do.
Thank you for having us.
It's again my pleasure. So guys, you know, it's thank you. It, you know, thank Power you. Foundation, Amelia Santa Lucia. Is that better? Or did I say it wrong?
Santa Lucia, you said better.
Santa Lucia. And Josh Van Pelt. Thank you guys for being on the podcast. And, you know, I just want to say, guys out there, check them out. It's a good thing. If you can help them out with, you know, from time to time they ask for scans or things like that, if you can help them out.
We definitely need to work on a few projects that I'll have to incorporate more fan participation. So hopefully some of these projects will get going someday, but it's all about time.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know, time is...
Yeah.
It's not of the essence. Like they said. It's very timely.
Yes.
So again, I just want to thank you guys, and you know, we'll wrap this up, and so we'll be on next week. Next week we actually have the Great Lion is gonna be on Monday. We got Larry to come on.
Sweet.
So he'll be here on Monday. And again, thanks guys, and we'll see you later, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Right.
Guys, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.